As human beings, we are instinctively drawn toward the grandeur of the natural world, to spectacular displays that inspire us with their magnitude and power. During moments like these, we are understandably filled with a genuine sense of awe. Yet nature's most stunning revelations aren't always defined by sheer force or physical scale. For often, in secluded corners of our planet, many of Earth's greatest wonders take center stage. Wonders of rare beauty and complexity, creativity and design. Wonders born on the gossamer wings of an insect weighing less than an ounce.
As you watch a butterfly, to describe what you're looking at, you can't really put it into words. And I said to myself, I want to be part of that. That is the coolest thing. That's biology. It's also magic.
When you hold a living butterfly in your hand for the first time, maybe you've netted it or you picked it off a flower or something, here's this incredibly beautiful organism, intricately shaped with its feet and antennae and all these things moving at once.
Every one of these 20,000 species have different color patterns, and every one of them has different shaped wings. The diversity is just so magnificent. If I was the greatest artist in the world, there was no way I could come up with all of these patterns. I mean, it would be just absolutely impossible.
If you open the work of a lepidopter, someone who studies butterflies, somewhere in that writing, you're going to find the language of astonishment. The fact that it goes through a caterpillar stage and then becomes this mysterious chrysalis out of which this flying creature emerges has captured the imagination of people since antiquity.
Throughout history, butterflies have touched the human mind and soul on levels both scientific and philosophical. 3,500 years ago, Egyptian artists studied their anatomies and then rendered them as icons of beauty and perfection of form. In Aztec and Mayan folklore, the insects symbolized life and death. And to the ancient Greeks, Psyche, the word for butterfly, literally meant the soul. Today, terms like magical and miraculous are often used to describe their mysterious life cycles. For almost every butterfly, it is a cycle that begins, often hidden from the eyes of the world. Depending upon its species, a female butterfly can lay hundreds of eggs during her brief lifetime. Each initiates an extraordinary process of growth and transformation.
The eggs are remarkable in themselves. They have species-specific architectures, some of which are just astonishing. For instance, if you look at a monarch egg, it has a beautiful symmetrical structure. It looks like a little miniature dome or cathedral.
Ranging in size from a pinhead to the width of a child's fingernail, each egg is attached to a plant by an adhesive fluid secreted by the butterfly. They are lined with a coating of wax that helps keep them moist and viable. Each egg is deposited on a specific species of plant called a host. These host plants are the only source of food a butterfly's offspring will eat, So accurate identification of their leaves and branches is crucial, and the females are well equipped for the task.
The perception that they have of the odor of those plants is just overwhelming. So they can find those plants for miles, and then once it gets near its host plant, it can tell that the odor is getting stronger and stronger. Then it begins to focus on leaf shape. Instinctively, it knows what leaf shape its host plant has. And it begins to taste. And it tastes with its feet, with its forelegs. They drum the leaves, they scratch the leaves. And then they use their proboscis to taste the scratch. They also smell with their antennae. So they've got the legs, they've got their proboscis, they've got their antennae. They have all these mechanisms to make sure that it's the right plant. If it's the wrong plant, their caterpillars are going to die. Butterflies just don't make mistakes. I mean, it's just amazing. It's one of the greatest wonders of nature to watch how this female can do all of this from such great distances.
In many species, the eggs hatch within a week. Then the newly emerged caterpillar, or larva, wastes no time embarking on the second stage of its journey to adulthood.
We call them eating machines because that's their only purpose in life, is to just eat and grow, eat and grow.
A really hungry, busy caterpillar, you can actually hear it eating. It sort of reminds you of corn on the cob, because it bites along and then it bites along some more.
It's just munch, 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 munch. Slice and chew, slice and chew, to build up the raw materials for the next stage of life.
A caterpillar could gain in weight so fast that it would be eating its own weight in leaves, leafy material every day.
Equipped with powerful jaws and a digestive tract that extends the length of its body, this stomach with legs can multiply its birth weight more than 3,000 times in less than 2 weeks.
To show you how remarkable this weight gain is, imagine you had an 8-pound human baby and he multiplied his weight 3,000 times as he was growing. That would be a 24,000-pound child. That's a big kid.
A caterpillar's growth is punctuated by violent surges of transition called molts.
Imagine the outer skin of a caterpillar as being sort of like a wetsuit. It's got a little bit of stretch to it, but limited. It's waterproof, so they don't dehydrate. Now, as the caterpillar grows, it fills out that wetsuit, and eventually it reaches a point where it can't grow anymore, and it has to make a new, larger version on the inside.
A molt begins when a caterpillar spins and then grasps a silk pad, anchors its body securely with small barbs on its legs, and splits its skin near the capsule covering its head.
There are sensors in the cuticle, in the skin of the caterpillar, that are strain detectors. They detect the amount of pressure or strain being put on the skin. And when that is too great, they send a signal to the brain of the caterpillar, which then releases a hormone that causes molting.
A caterpillar will undergo 4 or 5 molts. Its rapidly growing body is composed of 2 distinct cell populations: the larval cells that form all of its organs and enable it to function, and the imaginal cells that ensure its future as a butterfly.
In the later instars of the caterpillar, one can begin to see what are called imaginal discs. Now, these are the precursor cell populations for what will become wings and legs or sensory structures in the adult.
Most of these imaginal cell clusters develop in pairs and are positioned throughout the caterpillar's body in locations that correspond to the organs they will eventually help form in the adult.
Imaginal discs are precursors that are there and waiting. They're set aside to make adult structures. And at a certain point in development, those cells are triggered to start to grow.
As the end of the larval stage approaches, the caterpillar stops eating, finds a secluded spot, and spins another silk pad. When finished, it attaches itself with a pair of claspers on the end of its body, then hangs almost motionless.
It will hang there for a day or so, usually in a J position. All kinds of chemical reactions occur within that caterpillar. It changes color, and you have no idea what's going on inside there until all of a sudden it pumps the fluid so that the skin begins to split.
The caterpillar's final molt marks the beginning of the third stage of a butterfly's development and the appearance of a remarkable structure called a chrysalis. As the old skin is pushed away, the cremaster, a thin extension on the top of the chrysalis, works its way into position to permanently grasp the silk pad. With a scanning electron microscope, the cremaster is magnified more than 500 times.
The caterpillar has microscopic hooks on the cremaster, and it attaches those hooks to that silk pad that it puts on the bottom of a leaf or twig. And it begins to spin, and this caterpillar spins and spins and spins because it wants to get rid of that old skin that it has.
During the hour that follows, the chrysalis hardens and takes its final form as one of the most fascinating processes in nature is set into motion. The metamorphosis from caterpillar into butterfly.
What you see in a chrysalis is not a shapeless mass, but in fact, something very much like a mold for the adult butterfly.
You see the wing pads where the adult wings are going to form. You see the head and the compound eyes appear visible through the outer case of the pupal shell. Abdominal segments are very clearly separated from the thoracic segments where the wings are going to be attached. All of this is astoundingly new compared to the caterpillar, where everything looked sort of the same down the whole length of the body.
This transition from an earthbound plant-eating arthropod with limited vision and mobility into a beautiful winged insect that feeds on nectar, navigates with exceptional senses, and can fly 50 miles in a day is truly a marvel of the natural world. Exactly how it happens is still very much a mystery. Yet innovative research at the level of molecules and cells provides intriguing new clues.
There is some continuity of tissues from caterpillar to adult butterfly, but most of what was there in the caterpillar is going to disappear and be turned into new structures that have no analog in the caterpillar. For instance, there's nothing like the compound eye of the adult butterfly present in the caterpillar. There's nothing like the proboscis present in the caterpillar, or the long articulated legs in the caterpillar. So these are all novel structures that are going to be built.
In a metamorphic insect, what you've got is two body plans. You have to first form one functional body plan, and then you have to switch gears and you have to take and form a new body plan. I am amazed by development when it goes from egg to caterpillar, because it's such an intricate process. But then you have to enter into the chrysalis stage and you have to get it right again. So it's like the problem squared.
The creation of a butterfly begins with the partial destruction of the caterpillar. Inside the chrysalis, larval cells that form the caterpillar's limbs and organs are systematically digested and broken down.
You've got to get rid of or digest the caterpillar tissues. They won't work for the adult. In fact, the cells themselves disappear, but then their components are recycled and are turned into a kind of soup out of which the adult structures will be built.
Throughout this process, the imaginal cells, the foundation of the adult insect's body, are preserved to differentiate and multiply.
Now, cell death is programmed. It's not something that happens by accident. If you kill the wrong cells, you're in deep trouble.
It's very carefully engineered. You're going to save some of the cell populations, so you got to know where you're going to end up before you start. You don't want to digest everything, just things that need to be eliminated. Then the imaginal disc rapidly begin to proliferate, and you can trace a continuous pathway into the pattern on the wing.
This timeless drama of death and renewal is performed in the seclusion of the chrysalis, without audience or applause. During the past two decades, scientists have worked diligently to pull back the curtain.
I've been at this about 15 years, and the possibility of somehow getting in there to photograph what's inside a chrysalis, that question was out there all along, and it occurred to me that magnetic resonance imaging might be a perfect tool to use to see what goes on inside a chrysalis.
The challenge of visually documenting a butterfly's development led biologist Richard Stringer to Duke University and its Center for In Vivo Microscopy. There, over a 10-day period, monarch butterfly chrysalises were scanned throughout a complete cycle of metamorphosis. Each scan visually sliced the chrysalis into more than 200 sections. 8 hours into the first day, Stringer observed significant changes.
Even though it was very early in the development of the chrysalis, you could already see things forming that were going to be part of the butterfly, including the head, including the brain, including leg muscles, wings, antennae. The longer it's scanned, the more detail you get.
Stringer's magnetic resonance data was later used to create a three-dimensional dissection of the butterfly's body as it took shape within the chrysalis. On day one, the caterpillar's massive digestive tract is still nearly full size. By the 10th day, hours prior to the butterfly's emergence, the tract has been totally reconstructed. It is now about 25% of its original volume, ideal for the adult insect that will feed almost exclusively on nectar. During this transformation, the butterfly's reproductive organs, non-existent in the caterpillar, develop completely. While its tube-like heart is remodeled to fit and function within the abdomen of the butterfly. In the front of the chrysalis, dramatic anatomical changes continue. The caterpillar's simple eyes, capable only of discerning darkness and light, are replaced by large, complex organs of vision. A muscular system that will power flight and locomotion is built from both imaginal and recycled larval cells. The butterfly's six legs, two antennae, and feeding tube are individually formed while tightly compacted into a mass against the wall of the chrysalis. And four wings, each with elaborate networks of veins and scales, are shaped, decorated, and refined in less than 2 weeks.
It's like a different organism. And as the week goes on, transitions have to take place in the heart. Transitions have to take place in the antennae. Transitions have to take place in the reproductive organs. You got a big orchestra in there. You got a great big orchestra, and you got a conductor, some conducting force that's responsible for it all. I can say without any doubt that it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen.
Caterpillar into butterfly. The transformation to an entirely new way of living is nearly complete. During the first moments after emergence, the butterfly makes final preparations to fly and eat as it finishes construction of its proboscis and wings.
The proboscis is a straw-like tongue, hollow in the middle, and the butterfly has muscles in its head which can create a suction, a sort of a suction pump, and draw nectar up.
Within the chrysalis, the proboscis developed as two separate pieces. Now, immediately following emergence, the butterfly must assemble them into a single unit, or die of starvation.
It's two half straws. There's a channel on one side and has to get it into the channel the other side. You'll see two little appendages on their head called palpi. And those palpi seem to protect the proboscis and help that proboscis get put together.
As the butterfly knits together the proboscis, its wings also take on their final structure.
When the butterfly comes out of the chrysalis, the wings are like velvet. They're soft, they're pliable. There's veins, the wings are filled with veins.
What the butterfly does is, using its abdominal muscles, pumps hemolymph fluid into the veins, into the wings, and they quickly expand to their full size and shape.
Each of the butterfly's four wings is covered with thousands of microscopic scales that are positioned like shingles on a rooftop. These scales are not only arranged for aerodynamic efficiency and spectacular patterns, they also act as solar panels, collecting heat to warm the flight muscles of the cold-blooded insect. Butterfly's eyes are also formed from a vast network of component parts. Thousands of hexagonal light receptors work in unison to produce a mosaic view of the insect's environment. While the spherical shape of each compound eye creates a field of view more than 180 degrees wide.
They have four color vision systems, pigment systems, which enable them to see from the ultraviolet to infrared. Butterflies have better color vision than humans.
The butterfly's antennae, legs, and feet complete its sensory system. The antennae that control balance and equilibrium in flight recognize the aromas most important to the butterfly. Their clubbed ends are covered with scales that can detect the scent of a host plant or prospective mate more than a mile away. A butterfly has three pairs of jointed legs with scales and fine hairs that sense vibrations and possibly sound. While its legs and claws are lined with nerve cells that react upon touch to a leaf's distinct flavor. This heightened sense of taste is activated whenever the insect scratches the surface of a plant.
Some of the best biologists and chemists in the world are now studying the process of metamorphosis on a series of new levels, trying to integrate this with the advances and techniques that we have from molecular biology to modern imaging systems.
In the case of butterflies, it's like a fine piece of art. You can appreciate it at a sort of technical level in terms of what was required to get the pigment on the canvas and so forth. But what's going on is so much richer than that and so much more significant than that.
We know just the bare outlines of a few of the processes involved for metamorphosis. It's a mystery. It's like a black box. Input larva, black box. Output butterfly. What happened? What happened?
We only know a thousandth of what's going on inside those insects, inside that pinhead brain, and all the things that it can do, the way it can navigate, the way it can migrate, the way it can find the females, the way it can find the plant. It's one of the great wonders of the world.
As science probes deeper into the life cycles of the 20,000 species of butterflies known to inhabit the Earth, one story stands unique from any other. It is an epic saga that unfolds across a continent and a journey to the heart of the beauty and mystery that epitomize metamorphosis. For more than 30 years, researchers from throughout the world, including biologist Thomas Emmel, have traveled to a secluded forest to study a phenomenon unparalleled in nature: the monarch butterfly's migration to Mexico.
I've gone down every year since 1981, and many years made a number of trips, two, three, four trips a year. Here's a butterfly species that does something truly spectacular. Just imagine 300 million monarchs in one site that have flown 2,500, 3,000 miles to end up in these tiny 12 areas that still exist in the transvolcanic range of south central Mexico.
The monarch's migration begins each September when most of the North American population east of the Rocky Mountains departs for central Mexico. Their journey can span more than 2,500 miles and is critical for two reasons. Monarchs are tropical butterflies, unable to endure the freezing winter temperatures of the Midwest and Canada. And their life cycle depends upon the milkweed. More than 100 species of milkweed grow throughout the United States during the spring and summer. It is the only plant a female monarch will select to host her eggs. Milkweed leaves contain cardiac glycosides, toxic chemicals that can cause illness or death. After hatching, the caterpillar eats the plants and stores their poisons in its outer layer of skin. Then during metamorphosis, the glycosides are transferred from caterpillar to adult. And whenever the monarch spreads its wings, their distinctive pattern sends a warning to predators. Don't eat me. I taste terrible. Like the monarch, milkweed cannot survive the harsh North American winter, and by the end of August, it goes to seed.
And at that point, the monarch stops all reproductive activity. If it's a female, no more eggs. If it's a male, no more sperm. They still feed, are active, but they show no interest in sex or reproduction.
With no milkweed for their eggs until spring, the monarchs devote themselves entirely to preparation for a transcontinental flight. They spend the final weeks of summer feeding on nectar to build reserves of carbohydrates and fats, the fuel for their journey. Monarchs born in the spring or early summer have a lifespan of only 2 to 4 weeks. But the generation that emerges in August is genetically programmed to live up to 9 months, a provision crucial to survival.
The last generation of the summer, the one that's going to live all winter and into the following spring, is really an interesting problem for biologists, because here you have 2-3 generations preceding that generation where the adult lives at most 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then dies. And now all of a sudden, a generation's produced that's going to live 9 months, 9 times as long. It's thought that there's a genetic difference comprised of about 6 genes that are unique in this generation that enable it to live that long.
Often called the Methuselah generation. Their longevity will enable the butterflies to fly south for 8 weeks, endure 4 months of winter, and then start the return trip north to establish a new generation of monarchs in the spring. With the approach of autumn, the angle of the sun at midday drops below 56 degrees. The shortening days are the butterfly's cue to begin their migration. A network of sensory organs will enable them to navigate throughout the journey south.
The question is how the butterfly figures out what direction to go. We're looking at several things. The butterfly is able to detect day length through tiny organs on its antennae. It's able to detect the position of the sun above the horizon by visual senses, and also compensate with a biological time clock in its brain for the movement of that sun from early in the morning on the eastern horizon to the western horizon at the end of the day when it sets. So they're moving south, following the sun's directions, and they're adjusting their flight each day.
From as far north as Canada, Michigan, and Maine, the monarchs travel an average of 50 miles a day as they glide on currents of warm thermal air. By mid-October, their primary migration routes converge, as most of the butterflies funnel into southern Texas before crossing the border. Some, however, take a more direct route across the Gulf of Mexico. In late October, on evenings following the passage of a cold weather front, monarchs descend upon the gas and oil rigs throughout the Gulf. Perhaps attracted by the lights, the butterflies interrupt the longest non-stop leg of their journey. Here, among the pipes, ropes, and heavy machinery, they rest for the night. In 1993, biologist Gary Ross and a team of volunteers documented monarchs on more than 20 platforms during a two-week period. At daybreak, the butterflies warm their